If you haven't listened to episode one of this podcast series, please do that first, as I explain there how I stumbled across this case and why it's in the True Crime South Africa feed. Please also subscribe to Anthony Molyneux's podcast channel, 122 Podcasts, to ensure you don't miss out on any future updates about Robert John Johnson.
Yo.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
Good. It's been forever.
It's been a while.
Welcome back, everybody, to the third episode of Where is Robert John Johnson? This is an investigative podcast in which I've attempted to track down my old best friend, whose name was Robert John. I grew up with him in Bloemfontein, South Africa, back in the day. He ran an investment firm called JM Investments, and after friends and family handed over millions of rands to him, he suddenly disappeared. It soon came to light that he had fled the country, and for 6 years his whereabouts remained a mystery. In episode one, we spoke with victims who lost their savings and tried to decipher what most likely happened to their money. We also learned that he had abandoned his wife and 5-month-old child, and that both his parents had died a year after his disappearance, and he didn't attend their funerals. In episode two, new information came to light, revealing that Robert John, 6 years after he had fled South Africa, was actually living in a seaside tourist town in the north of Spain. Photos of him showed a solid friend group, he was playing regular golf, and he allegedly had a job at a hotel. We also learned that he had been visiting bars, restaurants, and resorts over the past 5 years, and was leaving reviews under the name Jason McGregor, which we found out was his new moniker. We discovered that he had come up with a clever cover story too about why he had left South Africa. He would tell certain people that he had witnessed a murder in a basement parking lot, and that the dangerous people who committed the murder were actually looking for him, trying to take him out. So even the police, he said, had told him he was in danger and that he should flee to protect himself and his family. This story is likely why people who knew him in Spain were very reluctant to give me any information about their friend, despite the allegations of him losing his friends and family's money. Now, we are in episode 3. And since our last episode, I've dug even deeper and have been able to get a phone number, reportedly belonging to Jason McGregor, or Robert John as we know him. After some thoughts, I decided to reach out to him on this number. I knew it was risky because if it was him, he might change his number quickly, he might suddenly flee, he might come back and threaten me with something. But I needed to verify if it belonged to Robert John. And I also wanted to speak with him, maybe just find out what the hell had happened. I sent him a message stating, "Hey Robbie, it's me, Molly." Molly was my nickname from high school. "I think we should talk. Let me know if you'd be open to that." I sent the message and waited. It took about 8 hours, but I got a response. And since then, we have spoken briefly over WhatsApp for about a week. So I asked if we could do a video call to actually see who I was speaking to and make sure it was indeed Robert John. I also asked if I could ask some tough questions and maybe he could give some insights into what had happened in 2020 when he fled. He agreed. And what follows is his story in his own voice about what has occurred. Here we go.
Yo.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
Good. It's been forever.
It's been a while. I keep track of things from afar and just to see what's happening, like for the first year or two after leaving South Africa, I blocked everything. A very strong case of PTSD and everything just like make me black out or anything. So I blocked it. But then after a while, you know, you miss the lives that you used to be part of and that, and you just want to see that people are doing well after all the shit, that everyone's like okay and doing okay. It'd be like a sense of peace.
I'm sorry to hear about the PTSD thing. I mean, what did you think that was from? Just from the severity of everything, like leaving, or was it something else?
It was the severity of leaving, but before leaving and after leaving, there was a lot of death threats. And that, like, wherever I was, if there was a noise or a movement, it would, like, strike me. And the thing is, yes, I get people 100% upset, but, you know, the death threats were quite severe. And it was over a long period. So, like, I think leaving that situation, there was a certain point where my body just was like, okay, we need to go into survival mode and, like, start blacking shit out. And, yeah, there was, like I say, a long time where I blacked things out, sometimes purposefully, sometimes not. But, yeah.
So you mean, like, blacked out, like, you wouldn't think about it or, like, you...
Sometimes by choice, I would, like...
Oh, yes, got you.
But then sometimes, like... couldn't remember anything regarding a certain situation. And yeah, that wasn't selective. That was obviously the brain trying to just protect itself. Yeah. And then after a while, like I said, you start dealing with things, you start following things again, just trying to kind of make good of a bad situation.
And then once you've done that now, like, how do you feel about, once you've had a little bit of time away from it, what are your thoughts around it? What is your summary of it?
The honest summary would be compounding bad choices, you know, over a course of a long time, not dealing with a small problem or not sharing information about a small problem or confiding. Just got into a bigger problem, bigger problem, bigger problem. And then it was fight or flight mode. And yeah, that my summary is there's small things that I did very badly and made very bad choices at the time. Whereas I'm sure if I'd leaned on someone or spoke to someone about different things, not only the investors, just different things that it would have been a drastically different outcome, but I couldn't see that. I only saw the worst outcome and tried to avoid that. Like I say, I should have at some point shared information with someone, anyone, be it a business manager, a psychologist, family, friends, anything, to get a different perspective, because I couldn't see any other outcome. And looking back to the points where everything started, there was many, many opportunities to do things differently and a lot smarter. I just couldn't see it at the time.
Was that because at the time you were worried about, like, upsetting people, or like that they wouldn't trust you anymore, or they'd be angry? Like, why weren't you giving them that information?
In the beginning, it was a bit of, I think, overconfidence that I could deal with the situation. I could deal with any problem. People didn't need to know. People didn't need to freak out. It would be dealt with. And then at another point, it was like, okay, I've got to actually look out for the best of my family, because by then already there was a lot of death threats.
So the threats against you, I mean, did you ever think about going to the police at that stage about the threats?
Not at all, because they were coming from people that we know that the police would not get involved. Maybe they did do something and they were under investigation, it would be too late. Like, I would be dead. It wouldn't matter.
I suppose the big thing that I think gripes people the most is, like, did he steal the money and then now he's living this lavish life? Because that is a narrative that people have in their mind. So, like, what would be your counter to that argument?
I don't know why I thought this, but I thought within a week or two of me leaving, because I never actually planned to leave. I planned on basically taking 2 weeks, evaluating everything, and then there would have been enough investigation or look into things, or that it would reveal like that I didn't leave with any money, like not a cent. I thought people would know that. But then obviously a year, 2 years later, when I'm following things and looking, and people are still like, yeah, he stole millions. Mm. I understand the narrative, but I really thought that there was going to be investigation done and that would prove that that's not the case. You know, I never took a cent. I didn't take a cent. Like, I really didn't leave with anything. You know, it was a laptop, a passport, and a phone. Mm. That was it. Mm. Whether people would find peace in it, I don't know.
So I'm guessing it was a bad investment, or it was a crash. There was talks about like a financial crash.
It was both and multiple. It was bad investments that was over leveraged, and that came with a bit of a crash. And then it's like, okay, take the loss and then try again. And then it's over leveraged the next one. And this was the compounding problem, was to try recuperate, it was leveraging too high and then taking a bigger loss. And there's a point where it comes, if you lose 50%, now you have to make 100% on that 50% that you have left. And it starts just going to absolute shit. There's no way of coming back from that unless you get very lucky, I suppose. It was bad decisions. It was market conditions that was a bad decision led to shit.
Yeah, so I'm guessing it was like that promise, if you want to put it, promise of that 4% per month vibe was just too high, right? It wasn't sustainable.
The 3 to 4% that in the beginning was quite easily achievable. You know, there was even a buffer of when the months went bad. Then you have a scenario when one trade takes out 20% of the portfolio. Then that's the problem. It was never actually the pressure of the monthly, because there was initially a buffer built, you know, for market conditions. But when you over leverage or maybe a bit overconfident about something, that was a problem. The conditions were very good in the beginning. You could basically buy anything and make good money. But when those conditions changed and you still stuck in the mindset of how it was last year, that's a problem. So the business grew so quickly by word of mouth. And that was a key part to the business, like that it was people that are close, you know, like, want to get successful together, want to build up something together, because there was always a point where, okay, this is going to be a fund that would actually then own other things, be it property, be it this, that everyone would be a part of. That was the idea. And so, there was never any type of Ponzi scheme. It was a legit business that initially did well, but there was a time that bad decision took a huge loss, and then it was just trying to recoup.
You've seen people being upset. Like, what would you like to say to those people that did lose a lot of their money and their retirements?
I would like to say I'm sorry. I would like to try to let them understand that I feel their pain, because with that financial loss, that was my family, friends, everything. Me, that was huge. Other than financial loss, there was a lot of other loss involved. I would love to say that I'm sorry and hope that it would never happen to them, that they're in that situation. I know I've put myself in shit. I've put a lot of people in shit. I justified everything with, if they kill me now, it's cool. Family's safe. I justified that with making these decisions. The only thing that I would actually ever say to people is try live your life that whatever decision you make does never lead you to not being able to see your child grow up, not being able to go to your parents' funerals, not being able to say goodbye. If you can live your life and just do that, that you can say goodbye to your parents and watch your children grow up, you've done well. That will be the biggest regrets. Like, yeah, you know, like I say, I've watched things from afar, but that will always haunt me, haunt me, haunt me, haunt me. Yeah, those, whatever decisions I've made that led to that, yeah, that I hope no one ever does. I just don't push it on anyone. Like, if you're going to make a bad choice, make sure it's not as bad as that you're going to not be able to say goodbye or watch your children grow.
What's your thoughts around the future? What would be your ideal outcome?
I honestly can't say, because, you know, some of the initial, like, the death threats and that will never go away. No matter what I do, no matter what anyone does, that will always linger. And yeah, unfortunately, I don't think there is any scenario where the future is good in any way. Unfortunately, it is what it is. Like, I chose a bad path and there's no coming back from it.
Perhaps this conversation with Robert John might bring closure for some. Maybe it'll raise more questions. But at least we have heard from him. And what's next, I really don't know. For me, this was a tragic story all round, and still is. One which shows that compounding bad decisions can lead to irreversible consequences. The call I had with Robert John was a video call, and I saw his eyes. I saw the shake of his phone. He had always had shaky hands growing up, but it felt different this time, more pronounced, like someone who was still struggling with these decisions that he had made. He doesn't seem to be loving life and sailing off into the sunset. He appears quite broken and guilt-ridden, and in sharp contrast to those photos of him winning awards at the golf club that we all saw. Photos can be deceiving. I don't know, maybe he is a good actor, and maybe he feels nothing inside, and he just spun a story to me. But the truth is, many people have been hurt by his actions. I think he believes there is nothing he can do except remove himself from his past life and try to forget everything. If that is not enough for the people who feel hurt by him, I do understand. However, my time with the story feels like it has come to an end. I'm not law enforcement. I set out to try and find out what happened and where he could be. I think we have found some of the answers to those questions. I hope they will serve some form of satisfaction to the people who are curious, but most importantly to those who lost their hard-earned savings. If you have any ideas about where this can go to next, let me know. However, I do find that this might be the final chapter of Where's Robert John Johnson? Thank you so much for listening, and if you want to go and listen to the first two episodes, it is now on Spotify, thanks to Nicole Engelbrecht who helped me. She runs True Crime South Africa podcast. She does amazing work. Go and listen to her stuff. And then I've got to say a big thank you to certain people. First of all, Alexander Strauss, Peter Ullifeed, and Werner van der Westhuizen. They've reached out to me and offered to help me with trying to track Robert John down. I also want to say thank you to Sharon and Margaret Moore for speaking to me and giving me a bit of their story. I know it was very difficult. And then thank you to everyone who listened and reached out. It's been strange, to be honest, but I do feel like I've connected with people that I haven't seen or spoken to in a long time, and it's been good to hear from everyone. Lastly, I'd just like to say, I know this story is not ideal, but hopefully there can be some sort of resolution to it at some point in the future. Thanks so much.